All right, well, got a great show ahead for you guys. So later in the program, how's this for an exciting tease? The debt ceiling. Ooh. All right, but Trump could crash the entire economy, so that's fun slash not at all fun. I have an awesome story for you guys at the end of this segment that you're gonna love. Speaking of fun, second hour, the crying Nazi is now in prison. Will he be allowed out? What's going to be his fate? And then affirmative action, the jury is in, or at least the numbers are in, from 1980 to now. How did it affect minorities going to school and white people going to school? Don't make any assumptions. It is fascinating stuff. We'll give you the real facts. That's in the second hour with Casper. Okay, having said that, let's begin to have fun. All right. I like that transition. Yeah. I liked it. We tried a new camera thing. It was fun. Yeah. I felt like Stephen Colbert there for a second. I just don't want it to be Glenn Beck with the camera swirling and swirling around. Anyway, okay. So Hurricane Harvey is on the way. This is for now, we believe that it's going to be a Category 3 hurricane. Could be winds of 115 miles per hour and heavy rains. It's likely to hit Texas, okay? So let me show you some pictures of the hurricane, or at least satellite pictures. And so that is a gathering storm, if you will. That is the path it is likely to take. Now that path is what's interesting about the story. I'm gonna get back to that in 1 second, but let me show you one more picture here. Okay, that is the level of precipitation and the strength of the storm. Now, we don't have Doppler 4000 here, and nor am I a weatherman. We could have brought in Mark Thompson for this, but that's not the point of my story. The point of my story is about whether this is God doing it. Now, that sounds outrageous, right? But I hear from conservatives all the time, whenever there's flooding or a hurricane, who do they blame? Do they blame meteorologists? No, and that wouldn't be fair either. Do they blame climate change? Oh, no, they don't. No, 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 no. They usually blame people like gays, lesbians, liberals, and they do it in one natural disaster after another. Now, sometimes, and especially if it hits areas where they think there is a higher percentage of liberals or gays, like for example, when the hurricane hit New Orleans, there was very prominent right-wing pastors in the country who said it was because of the gays in New Orleans. Now, it wasn't because of the overwhelmingly conservative voters of Louisiana. No, no, definitely not. So I was curious to see, now there's a hurricane coming, a new one in this season, where it's gonna hit and why God is upset. Is it gonna hit gay people again? And hence the idea that it is directed towards them because God is angry at us. Well, let's find out. The US National Hurricane Center upgraded Harvey to a hurricane from a tropical storm on Thursday afternoon, so it's getting stronger, and said it would strengthen into a Category 3 hurricane before hitting the Texas coast late on Friday or early on Saturday. So it's coming, guys. The storm is coming and it is getting stronger and stronger. Now, there's a theory out there that as the planet warms up, ocean also warms up and it actually intensifies the storms, and hence maybe going from a tropical storm to a Category 3 hurricane is exactly what would happen during climate change. Now, you can't say that any one storm is because of climate change, but again, let's focus on why God might be angry here, because I'm sure that that's the reason, not having anything to do with climate change. Energy companies, wait a minute, including Royal Dutch Shell, Anadarko Petroleum and ExxonMobil have evacuated staff from offshore oil and gas platforms in the storm's path. Huh, how's that for a twist? Didn't see that coming. Maybe God is angry at the oil companies. What did the oil companies do? Oh right, create climate change, certainly helped to create it. Well, is it just a couple of companies there? I mean, that's like cherry picking like the reverends do about LGBT members during storms, etc. Well, let's find out. More than 45% of the country's refining capacity is along the US Gulf Coast, and nearly the fifth of the nation's crude oil is produced offshore in the region. That's a gigantic percentage of the refineries in just a small little area, just the area where the hurricane is gonna hit. Huh, Is it coincidence or perhaps justice? The storm could also bring flooding to inland shale oil fields in Texas that pump millions of barrels per day of crude. So there's the oil fields getting hit, there's the refineries getting hit, there's the crude oil getting hit. You start climate change and all of a sudden you get the consequences of climate change. When it hits everyone else, oh, no big deal, it was the gays who did it. When it hits you, all of a sudden maybe you're a little concerned. Now you're a little worried about your bottom line, gas prices going up, etc. Well, hey, I gotta protect my bottom line. How about the whole world's bottom line? How about when it hits everywhere, you're just as concerned? Now look, do I want people of Texas getting hurt? Absolutely not. I don't want anybody getting hurt. I don't care who they voted for, or what they do, or what their jobs are, or anything along those lines. Because we're not actually monsters like the right wing are, and like those insane fundamentalist preachers are. Now, having said that, man, if these oil companies, it's not if, they are an enormous part of the reason why climate change exists in the first place. So I'm not gonna shed a tear about the financial damage that it does to those companies, as they have inflicted enormous financial and human damage, often costing incredible amounts of lives all over the world with climate change. They privatize the gains, but they socialize the losses on all of us with the consequences of their actions, which is a warming of the planet. So those chickens coming home to roost in Texas over the weekend. So I hope every human being is safe. And by human beings, I do not include multinational corporations, especially the ones that started climate change in the first place. Okay. I hope they don't get angry. I mean, you could pollute the whole world, put all of our lives in danger. And then when you get a little tiny amount of comeuppance, I hope you're not angry. Not angry, are you? Okay. Now, speaking of which, well, did those guys really deceive people? Well, it's a good thing I got the second story in the news today, just happens to be in the news today, about the same issue, okay? Not about the hurricanes, but about climate change. So new documents out from ExxonMobil Corporation that goes back four decades, Harvard study on it, peer reviewed, and boy, it's got some interesting findings. So let's go to HuffPost that summarizes it. ExxonMobil Corporation apparently deliberately deceived the public about the dangers of climate change for four decades, a new Harvard University study finds. So they go on to explain the details. For the peer-reviewed study published in the journal Environmental Research Letters Wednesday, two Harvard researchers analyzed 200 documents related to ExxonMobil's climate change communications. The researchers found that America's largest oil producer had repeatedly made, quote, explicit factual misrepresentations about global warming in advertisements aimed at the general public, while simultaneously acknowledging its risks behind closed doors. So credit to the ExxonMobil scientists, actually, because they study climate change. They report back to their bosses, yes, it exists, yes, it's man-made, yes, it could have devastating consequences. Those executives receive that research and go, thank you very much, we really appreciate it. Now, could you go ahead and deposit that in the garbage while you're on your way out? Now, let's run ads telling the American people how climate change is no big deal, it might not exist, but you just got the research. Who cares? It affects my bottom line. Look, besides which, climate change, ExxonMobil doesn't bear the costs. You bear the costs. They get the profits, you get all the costs. The whole world does. So, more details. The discrepancy, researchers said, was staggering. About 80% of ExxonMobil's research and internal memos acknowledged that climate change was real and caused by humans. However, 80% of the company's newspaper ads regarding climate change questioned this fact, the study found. So, ExxonMobil, when asked for a comment, outrageous, how dare they? One of their excuses was, they cherry picked evidence. No, when you have 80% in both directions, that's not cherry picking, that's the overwhelming majority. 80% of your research said, yes, it is man-made, and partly because of these fossil fuels that you're burning. Okay, and then 80% of your ads said the exact opposite. Oh, I don't know, maybe not. Probably not. Whatever you do, don't do it. This doesn't even include all of the grotesque lobbying and legalized bribery that ExxonMobil and all the other fossil fuel companies did in buying our politicians and saying, oh, go out there and go on TV, let alone the think tanks, and go out there in the Senate and Congress, tell people climate change is real. It's a hoax. It's a hoax. Hurricane Harvey is going to hit Texas this week and is set to hit ExxonMobil refineries. What happened? I thought it was a hoax. Well, batten down the hatches, because that hoax is headed in your direction over the weekend. So I hope nobody gets hurt, but I'm not going to shed a tear if those refineries get hammered by the climate change that they knew was on its way. And when it affected everyone else, they didn't care at all. So how long has ExxonMobil been doing this deceit? Well, an internal ExxonMobil memo in 1979, for instance, acknowledged a possible link between fossil fuel combustion and an increase in atmospheric carbon dioxide. Another memo from 1982 described a potentially catastrophic events that could arise from climate change, such as the melting of the Antarctic ice sheet, which, by the way, is happening right now. That's not in the future, it's happening right now, today. Now, back then, I didn't even believe in climate change, partly because these guys paid all those people to lie to us over and over again, their ads, their lobbyists, their senators, their think tanks, because they made so much money from that lie. But at the same time, while they had confused us, and there would later be overwhelming evidence, 9 of the 10 hottest years on record were in the last 10 years. And on and on and on, every record, almost every month last year, we broke a record for the hottest month ever in recorded history for that month. And now the evidence is overwhelming. But they knew it all the way back in 1982. They told their executives, this will have catastrophic consequences. And the executives were like, wait, let me get this right. Does it have catastrophic consequences for my bonus in this year and the next couple of years while I'm at Exxon? Oh, it doesn't. Well, I'll continue to stuff those profits into my jowls. And hey, scientists, who pays the cost? Do I pay the cost? No, oh, I don't. The whole world does. Perfect. Privatize the gains, socialize the costs. They knew all along. They knew better than we did. The only other person that in 79 and 82 was sounding the alarm bell is probably Al Gore. They might have known even before Al Gore. A peer-reviewed study conducted by ExxonMobil scientists in the 1990s concluded, quote, the body of evidence now points towards a discernible human influence on global climate. Another one from 2002 found that limiting atmospheric carbon dioxide levels could be needed to, quote, to forestall coral reef bleaching, thermohaline circulation shutdown, and sea level rise. When they did an Inconvenient Truth, and now an Inconvenient Sequel is out, and in Inconvenient Truth they talked about the rising sea levels, and conservatives, partly paid off by ExxonMobil, were like, oh, come on, sea level rise, that's not going to happen. In reality, they knew decades earlier. In 2002, they already had their own scientists saying, oh, no, sea levels will definitely rise. Catastrophic consequences, enjoy that. Anyway, and the executives look at it and go, oh, that's fascinating. Yeah, I'm gonna continue to make millions of dollars. And all of those problems, sea levels rising, cities being destroyed, extreme weather events that hit people that kill hundreds of thousands of people. And that is documented fact as well. There are peer-reviewed studies on that. Hundreds of thousands of people dead. That's not my problem, I'm gonna make millions of dollars. I work at ExxonMobil, it's okay. They're not that powerful anymore, ExxonMobil, right? Oh no, right, their CEO is now the Secretary of State and helped to kill the Paris Climate Accord, which would have done something about climate change. They're still in charge, they're still lying, they're still deceiving all of us. So now here's what the ad said at the same time that they were getting research saying, yes, climate change is real, yes, it's caused by humans, yes, it's gonna be catastrophic. In their ads, they said, it's, quote, too uncertain to mandate a plan of action that could plunge economies into turmoil. Too uncertain, when in fact they knew with great certainty that it was happening. Here's another ad quoted as unsettled science, when in reality, their own scientists concurred that it was completely settled. They have lied to all of us. They've lied for their own profits, and they're going to make you pay the price. Look, when your product has a side effect or a consequence, whether it's a drug or it's polluting into a river, we want to make sure that the kids that are taking those drugs or that are swimming in those rivers don't pay the price, you pay the price. These guys have put price on all of our heads throughout all of the world, and they knew it, and they did it brazenly, and they did it for profit in the short term for themselves. I want the money back. They took all that money home, but they put all the costs on us, and the costs are now in the billions, perhaps trillions of dollars. So where's our money? You put the cost into it. I didn't do it. Hey, did you gain from ExxonMobil's profits? I didn't gain from it. Did you gain from it? None of us gained from it. Only they gained from it. And they knew they were lying to us the whole time. Give us the goddamn money back. At least let us begin to fix the mess you created and that you knew you were creating. They have their spokesperson come out and say, our statements have been consistent with our understanding of climate science. Notice it doesn't say our scientists' understanding of climate science. So it's just as our understanding, our executives understood that they're going to make a lot of money and that they're going to put all the costs on you and your families. Ha ha. Oh yeah, your evidence is 80%. That's cherry picked. No, 20% would be cherry picked. 2% would be cherry picked. 80% is overwhelming. Now, luckily, some people are finally beginning to take action. Last month, three communities in California sued 37 oil, gas, and coal companies, including ExxonMobil, Shell, and Chevron, for their alleged contributions to sea level rise and for concealing the hazards posed by global warming. Damn straight, just the beginning. It's the tip of the iceberg, if you will, because these guys have damned us all. They've heated up the planet for their momentary profit, and they ran amok and they did it on purpose. At a bare minimum, we should get all of their profits back, not so that you redistribute the wealth, so that you actually pay for the cost they created. They redistributed the wealth. They put it in their pockets and they made you pay for it. It's time to get it back. These suits against these oil companies is just the beginning. And it's not a matter of retribution, it's a matter of justice. Why should we pay for your costs when you all got rich and knew you were destroying the planet? And then when Hurricane Harvey hits over the weekend, ExxonMobil refineries, they'll cry and cry. Nah, man, no, it's time to get up and fight back. So, and now they got us out of the Paris Climate Accord and they won't do anything to fix what they started. We should sue them to oblivion, let alone the political consequences. Every Republican and some corporate Democrats that pretend that climate change isn't real or we shouldn't do anything about them, vote them all out, vote them all out. And the next time a hurricane hits you in Texas or Oklahoma, guess who did it? These guys did it, they did it. It's not that hurricanes didn't exist before, they are much more severe now. Look into the science. And if you don't believe the so-called liberal media science, look at ExxonMobil science. They knew it. Their scientists knew it all along. They lied to you, they tricked you, and they're still doing it today. Okay, look, I have a real fun story about some guy at a Trump rally, but I'm not in the mood for fun right now. So we're gonna take a break. I'm gonna regroup here, get in a better mood. Maybe while I'm still angry, we'll do the debt ceiling. But the story about blacks for Trump, the one black guy behind Trump in the Phoenix rally, you are going to love it. We'll be right back. All right, back on the Young Turks. So a couple of quick tweets for you guys. Bill Runaway writes in, if the refineries get smashed, nature has a sense of irony. Jerazy Mobins writes in, I understand why they're here, but wildfires and tropical storms destroy our communities. I condemn the climate change on both sides. Yeah, oh, I see. For a second there, I was going to address you seriously. Climate change is happening on many, many sides. YouTube Super Chat, Maxwell Crystal says about one of our ads, LOL, I love this commercial when Cenk proclaims he will get so ripped. Anna's response, we're tired of you winning, had me dying. Okay, that's funny, Maxwell. Okay, lots of stories for you guys. Let's do it. Okay. We've got a debt ceiling situation going on. This happened under Obama a lot, and now it's happening under Trump. Every once in a while, they have to increase the debt ceiling, not for new debt. It's not the budget. It's for the old debt we already have. We just have to say every once in a while, yes, we will continue to pay the debt, that we are in fact Lannisters, and we do pay our debts. So now, the White House put out a statement saying, oh, of course, no problem, no problem at all. Political reports, the White House has come out in favor of a clean debt ceiling increase, meaning simply raising the borrowing limit without pairing it with other potentially controversial initiatives. Okay, sounds right. That's basically what the Obama administration wanted, as the Trump administration wants. No way. I read that statement and I was like, no, they're not going to do that. That's Gary Cohn, who heads the Economic Council, saying that. That's Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, saying that. That's not Trump saying that. And after I thought that, here's what Trump said.
Now, the obstructionist Democrats would like us not to do it, but believe me, if we have to close down our government, we're building that wall.
They're building that wall if they have to close down the government. What happened? I thought you were going to do a clean debt ceiling. There's also the issue of the budget having to be approved. They're probably going to kick that down the road. But Trump is basically saying either way, either for one of those situations, we'll close down the government. Did my guy say that we would do this in a reasonable and sane way? Of course not. No. I'm Donald J. Trump. So after the speech in Phoenix, which we just showed you, he goes doing a Twitter storm. Of course. So here's what he says. I requested that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan tie the debt ceiling legislation into the popular VA bill, Veterans Affairs bill, which just passed for easy approval. They didn't do it, so now we have a big deal with Dems holding them up, as usual, on debt ceiling approval. Could have been so easy, now a mess. Wait. First of all, the Republicans held up the debt ceiling every single time under Obama. Okay, let's put that aside for a second. Second of all, the Democrats want a clean debt ceiling vote. That's the thing that your administration promised we'd have. They're not the ones holding it up. You're the ones holding it up because you want to add things like funding for the wall, which has nothing to do with the debt ceiling or even the regular budgetary process. So the wall could at least have something to do with the budget process, but that's a negotiation you needed to have a long time ago instead of trying to ram it through at the end and threatening a government shutdown. So, and what happened? I thought you weren't going to attack Mitch McConnell. Because remember, we told you yesterday, there was a huge story in the New York Times about how Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump yelled at each other at the top of their lungs, apparently, and cursed at each other on August 9th and haven't spoken since. One of the things that baby Trump was mad about is that McConnell didn't protect him from the Russian investigation. McConnell doesn't even have anything to do with the Russian investigation. He's so scared. He's a scared little child. Anyway, and then the White House put out a statement saying, oh, no. There's no discord between Donald Trump and Mitch McConnell. Why do you bother putting out statements that Donald Trump is going to overturn in a matter of hours on Twitter? Like, you still haven't learned that your president is a completely undisciplined child? So the White House put out, oh, no, McConnell, we're fine. Trump goes on Twitter, I hate McConnell. It's his fault, the debt ceiling. Okay, and then he went on to say, the only problem I have with Mitch McConnell is that after hearing repeal and replace for 7 years, he failed. That should never have happened. He even talks like a child. So what happened? I thought you guys weren't fighting. That looks like you're fighting. Yet another billionth lie in a row for Donald Trump to say that they weren't fighting in the first place. And he can't help himself. He just repeats things over and over and over again. Was a little bit of irony in me saying over and over again. Okay, Donald Trump then said, hey, believe me, if we have to close down our government, we're building that wall, as we showed you earlier. So that is now doubling down on what's going on. Well, they asked Paul Ryan, really, are you guys gonna threaten the full faith and credit of the United States, endanger the global economy, and shut down the government? over his promises of a stupid wall, Ryan said, the president is employing a strategy that he thinks is effective for him. In other words, the president's an idiot, and I hope to God he doesn't do anything stupid, because we've got to make sure that we increase the debt ceiling, otherwise we're not paying our bills and it ruins our credit, which drives up interest rates, drives up the deficit, and ruins the economy. But you think Trump is sophisticated enough to understand that? It actually doesn't take that much, but there's no way he understands that. He's a moron of the highest order, and he's been doing this for a long time. Back in May, he had said it before too, so it's actually tripling down. In May, he had said, our country needs a good shutdown in September to fix mess. Yeah, how does shutting the government down fix a mess? It causes a bigger mess, which is Donald Trump 101. But then Jonathan Karl of ABC News had probably the best question to Sarah Huckabee Sanders today in a press conference. Wait, why do we even have to pay for the wall in the first place? Watch.
Sarah, the president promised over and over again during the campaign that Mexico would pay for the wall. So why is he now threatening a government shutdown if Congress won't pay for it?
The president's committed to making sure this gets done. We know that the wall and other security measures at the border work. We've seen that take place. Making sure the American people are protected. And we're going to continue to push forward and make sure that the wall gets built.
Why is he threatening a shutdown over paying for it? I mean, again, he said over and over again, he talked about the campaign over and over again, he said Mexico's going to pay for the wall. He asked people, his crowds chanted back, and Mexico's going to pay for it. And now he's pushing, threatening a shutdown of the government.
Now, once again, the president's committed to making sure this happens, and we're going to push forward.
Oh, I guess Mexico is not paying for it. Line number 1,000,000,001. Mexico was never going to pay for it. You believe that crap? He never had a plan. There was never a secret plan for ISIS. There was never a secret plan for the budget. There was never a secret plan to make Mexico pay for the wall. No, he's going to make you pay for the wall, and he might shut down the government to do it. And if he does it over the debt ceiling, it might destroy the economy in the process. I told you, his number one issue, total, utter incompetence. Okay, so now I'm not done with the debt ceiling yet. Let's go to the next part of it. Okay. Now, here we are again negotiating the debt ceiling. When President Obama was in office, the Republicans would hold the debt ceiling hostage and they would say, oh no, we need concessions from the Democrats. If we don't get concessions, Congress is not going to approve it. We don't care that you have a Democratic president, we have a Republican Congress. We're not going to approve the debt ceiling. Concessions, we want concessions. And the Democrats would have to negotiate and give them concessions. Okay, it's okay, now the Republicans are in charge. They have the White House and Congress. So you guess what they're demanding? Concessions from Democrats. Listen to Lindsey Graham.
Let's play in politics with the majority for a change. We've been on defense ever since I've been up there. We've got the floor. We can determine what comes to the floor. Let's take some hard votes. Let's make Democrats say no to raise the debt ceiling, no to funding the troops, no to helping veterans. See how many of them break. I don't know why we don't do that. And I think that's what President Trump is saying.
So now that we control Congress and the White House completely, let's make the Democrats pay a price. Earlier when they controlled the White House, let's make the Democrats pay a price. Sounds like a broken record. And the hypocrisy, they're Republicans, they don't care about it. Like that bothers other human beings to them. They're like, you're just being rational, which is silly of you. So back when Obama was in charge, the conservative outlet National Review wrote this. President Obama is demanding that Congress raise the debt ceiling in the next 2 weeks without offering any restraint on future debt. Given an $18 trillion national debt, that's a recipe for fiscal disaster. Okay, wait. So back when Obama was saying let's raise the debt ceiling, that was a disaster. Guys, I'm actually going to go out of order here. Let's go to video 3. Now this is Paul Ryan. He's the Speaker of the House for the Republicans. So I was told by the National Review that we cannot raise the debt ceiling. That would be a fiscal disaster. Let's go to Paul Ryan.
I'm really not that worried about this. We have plenty of options ahead of us. We will pay our debts and we will make the debt limit. We will hit the increase before this is penetrated, meaning we will pass a debt limit increase before we hit the debt limit. Plenty of options in front of us.
Do those options include a clean hike of the debt ceiling?
There's a bunch of different options in front of us. I'm not going to kind of negotiate to the media, but we have a lot of options in front of us. I'm really not worried about getting this done because I know we will get this done and we will pass the increase before we hit the debt limit.
Okay, the debt limit is going to raise. Well, I thought it was a fiscal disaster before. Now it's fiscal genius move, apparently. They don't care about hypocrisy. Back then, the National Review wrote, the administration is using the debt limit to put taxpayers between a rock and a hard place, either authorize more debt or face a financial crisis and government shutdown that will be orchestrated by the president. You know what? Again, I'm going to go out of order here. Let's go to video one. This is Donald Trump in Phoenix just the other night. Talking about what is he doing? He is going to orchestrate a government shutdown to put people between a rock and a hard wall. Watch.
Now, the obstructionist Democrats would like us not to do it, but believe me, if we have to close down our government, we're building that wall.
Hypocrisy much? Okay, we're not done yet. I've got one more compilation, which is a J.R. Jackson special about all the times that they went after Obama. He wants to raise the debt ceiling. Oh, and he wants things in return. That's outrageous. That's outrageous. Keep in mind that now Donald Trump is saying, hey, man, I'm going to hold things hostage until you give me that wall. Now, watch what they said under Obama.
What he's guilty of is anti-democracy arrogance. There's always a negotiation around raising the debt limit, usually around budget issues.
I don't need to hear any crap from Harry Reid about bipartisanship. He doesn't know bipartisanship, nor does the president. And one other thing, this debt default, if the president instructs the Treasury Secretary to, though the money is there to pay interest, if he instructs him to default, I think we're getting close to a high crime and misdemeanor that would harm this country.
Right. I mean, look, this president is just simply grasping for straws.
Look, in part, Congress helped create this problem, but we are going to here now solve this problem. I got elected to uphold the Constitution and to leave this country better than how we found it. We can't keep spending our kids' inheritance. I mean, we can't keep spending their money.
And this is why Republicans should be obstructionist. Obamacare is bad for our health. Big government's bad for the economy. And my view is, if the Republicans aren't defunding one and shutting down the other, what's the point of electing Republicans? I mean, we keep hearing about the bad politics of the Republicans acting obstructionist in this way, but I think much worse politics for Republicans would be to get to 2014 and say, oh yeah, Obamacare's in full flower and the government's much larger. Why did we put them in power in 2010 to begin with?
Well, that's a great point.
This president has proven that he will do almost anything to protect the size and the scope of Washington, D.C.'s burgeoning bureaucracy, including to threaten the economic security of every American by backing us up to the edge of default.
Well, I think the person, David, who is guilty of extortion is President Obama, if you look over the last 3 years.
And I think part of the reason Speaker Boehner, others got our, you know, we got ourselves into trouble is we listened too much to Harry Reid and the president. We should do what we believe in.
And it's a form of extortion that's been particularly cruel to the poor and the elderly who rely on fixed income. So the president is the one who's committed extortion here, and he's hurt the poor and the elderly the most.
The reality is we have to stop spending money we don't have. And you've got to attack entitlement reform and you've got to attack discretionary spending.
Again, obstructionism doesn't look good on nightly news, but the fact is that it has helped lower the cost of government dramatically.
Yeah, David, it's the only good thing that's happened in recent years for the economy. Less resources are being drawn out.
So if the president instructs to default, it, according to Mitch McConnell, that threatens economic security. And back when they were doing the obstruction of President Obama, well, that's the only thing protecting the economy. Now they're saying, oh, we need the Democrats because this needs to be filibuster proof. We need 8 Democrats. How dare they do obstruction? But my favorite were the two about how could the president get us this close to a government shutdown because of the debt ceiling. That is extortion that hurts the poor and the elderly most. And if he instructs us to default, according to Louis Gohmert, it would be a high crime and misdemeanor. Now, let me see President Trump one more time.
Now, the obstructionist Democrats would like us not to do it, but believe me, if we have to close down our government, we're building that wall.
What was that about high crimes and misdemeanors? All right, so let's move on to the next story. I think that was clear enough. after Charlottesville, President Trump did something horrific. He came out and blamed many, many sides. And he said that there were very fine people on the alt-right side of that white nationalist event that included the Klan, the neo-Nazis, and other white pride, white power movements that chanted deeply anti-Semitic, racist, and homophobic chants. And he said that there were people that were very, very violent on the side of the people who were run over, the counter-protesters, the people protesting fascists and Nazis in America. So it was grotesque. I asked for mass resignations. A lot of people asked for mass resignations. There were a lot of excuses, which we covered earlier this week on the program, where people were telling Axios, they had a good story about it, inside the administration, go, well, I mean, look, the president would do things that are even dumber if we weren't around. So plus, this is a nice cushy job and I have a lot of power, so I'm not gonna leave. Those are the unprincipled people. But you might not have heard about it, but there has been a ton of resignations. That borders on mass resignations. It's just not being reported very much. Now, you did hear about the Manufacturing Council, that's the CEOs, that started leaving one by one, the Under Armour CEO, the Intel CEO, the Merck CEO, on and on, until Trump had to go, I didn't want a Manufacturing Council anyway, I'm disbanding it. And then the Strategy and Policy Forum, with deeply Republican and Trump supporters on it, and also CEOs and financial people, did a phone call and decided, no, we gotta leave. And even, I'm telling you, even some of the biggest Republican donors were like, no, this is reprehensible. And they disbanded the group. After they disbanded the group, Trump came out with a tweet saying, the Strategy and Policy Forum, I never wanted it anyway. No, I'm disbanding it. No, you didn't do it, they did it. So those two groups are already gone. But now there's more people resigning. Seven members of the National Infrastructure Advisory Council, which includes Obama appointees, resigned this week, citing Trump's Charlottesville response and other issues. So what does this council do? Well, the National Infrastructure Advisory Council is made up of presidential appointees from the private sector, academia, and government, and was originally founded in 2001 under President George W. Bush. It advises the president on security, including cybersecurity for critical infrastructure like water systems. Well, now 7 out of the 27 members of that council have left the building. I'm gonna give you their exact quote in a second, but let me give you a sense of the relevant players here. One of them was Kristen Dorgello. She was the former chief of staff at the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy under Obama. Then you have DJ Patil, former White House chief data scientist. A lot of the scientists leaving the building. Christy Goldfuss, former managing director of the White House Council on Environmental Quality. They couldn't take it anymore. They explain here at HuffPo, the Trump administration has not shown itself to be, quote, adequately attentive to the pressing national security matters within the NIAC's purview or responsive to sound advice, the resigning council members wrote. In other words, doesn't matter what you tell the president, he's never gonna listen anyway. Doesn't matter if it's a former Obama appointee, of course he's not gonna listen to that person. Scientists, you guys are telling me climate change exists, I know it's a Chinese hoax. He doesn't even listen to his own advisors. His own advisors said, hey, you should do a clean debt ceiling vote. He comes out the next day going, no, that's it, we're not gonna do a clean debt ceiling vote. It's Mitch McConnell's fault, it's Paul Ryan's fault, and I wanna build a wall, and I'm gonna hold everything hostage until I do. The guy doesn't listen to any advice, and let alone sound advice. The resigning members also wrote a little bit more strongly now, your actions have threatened the security of the homeland I took an oath to protect. And so they have left. Now remember that these are not the only resignations. You got these, you got the ones I told you about before. Trump also ended plans for another advisory council on infrastructure last week. And then every member of the White House Arts Committee resigned. Look. You know, I don't know what your thoughts on arts are and cybersecurity and infrastructure and manufacturing. I think some might consider more important, but every part of the government matters, and I think every one of these resignations matters. So God bless the Arts Committee for saying, no, I'm not gonna be part of a White House that equivocates on neo-Nazis. I'm just not gonna do it. So they're gone. And then a science envoy for the State Department also sent a resignation letter to Trump on Wednesday that contained a not so subtle secret message, impeach. So the artists have left, the scientists have left, the businessmen have left. Almost anyone with any degree of sanity or decency has already left the building. That doesn't leave you much. It leaves the ghouls, the goblins, and the deplorables still backing Donald Trump. The most important thing is one other guy to leave the building, and his name is Donald J. Trump. We'll make that happen soon enough. We'll be right back. Back on TYT, ask and ye shall receive. Here's a new addition to the soundboard.
Antifa! Antifa! Antifa!
That's fun for everybody. Okay, Travis Keys writes in on YouTube Super Chat. How do you think the Trump election will be viewed in 100 years? The age of the internet keeping records of everything Trump says. Here's what they're going to say to us 100 years from now. No, that's not it. Wait.
Shame. Shame. Shame.
Okay. Jamal says, just Trump, Trump. He's the self-proclaimed king of debt. You know, that's a great point. This knucklehead, and he said it in the past too, probably thinks, not probably, definitely, because he literally said it during the campaign, that if you default on the debt in America, it's not a big deal. He's defaulted on debt 6 times. That's what he does. No, it's not the same if the government defaults on the debt. It's not remotely the same, you jackass. Okay, Digital Shart writes in, I'm not watching live, but LOL, whatever dumbass thing Trump did today. I'm amused by that. And Unregistered Chicano writes in, those clips are painful, man. Assholes on parade. I think I saw that on Broadway once. Anyways, all right, let me get angry again. Run over here, and then I promise at the end I'm going to give you a wonderfully funny story, okay? All right. Now, you know, in Charlottesville, they had the situation where a neo-Nazi ran over 20 people, actually ran over a lot of people, injured 19 and killed Heather Heyer. And everybody was outraged by it, with the possible and notable exception of Donald Trump. But a lot of Republicans did the right thing. They said the right words. And unlike Trump, they came out and called out the fascists for what they were. But if you didn't know, there have been Republicans all across the country who have actually proposed legislation to make it legal to run over people if they're protesting. Now, they say that it's unintentional, but with a serious wink thrown in there. So let me give you a couple of examples. The Intercept wrote about this, Zed Jelani and Lee Fong. In Texas, for example, State Representative Pat Fallon introduced a bill to limit the liability of motorists responsible for hitting individuals who are, quote, blocking traffic in a public right of way while participating in a protest or demonstration. The Combined Law Enforcement Association of Texas, that's CLEAT, a statewide coalition of municipal and county police associations, lists Fallon's bill among legislation supported by CLEAT. By the way, CLEAT as in we step on you and leave our CLEAT marks. So that's really subtle. Anyway, when Representative Pat Fallon in Texas was asked about this, Jesus, man, this bill would make it legal to run over protesters, he still stands by the bill and says, oh, no, 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 this is if you unintentionally run over protesters, wink. But don't worry, you still won't be held liable. They're not alone. North Carolina's version of the immunity bill, HB 330, passed the lower chamber of the legislature in April. The text of this bill says that a person driving an automobile who's exercising due care and injures another person who's participating in a protest or demonstration and is blocking traffic in a public right of way is immune from civil liability for the injury. By the way, in Charlottesville, the people who were protesting had the counter protesters of the Nazis had every right to be there. They had permits, but they were on a place where you could drive a car. That's why the Nazi guy drove the car and hit them. So according to these bills, because well, I mean, it was kind of a road. It was an alleyway. It was a road. And I mean, I don't know, maybe he was trying to, this is the Nazi excuse, by the way, they literally said this. Maybe he was trying to get away from those scary violent counter protesters, like Donald Trump said. He said the counter protesters were violent. And so, hey, if he, you know, ran into them the way that he did, if this bill passed in the lower chamber of North Carolina's legislature was to be in effect, they'd say not guilty. You had a, why, look, think about this, right? If all they cared about was making sure that people are safe on highways, why wouldn't they say, hey, if you go on a highway and someone runs into you, it's partially your fault. Now, I wouldn't agree with that either. Don't run over anybody. Take all care, not just a little bit of care. But they didn't say that. They specifically pointed out protesters. If you see protesters on a road, we're going to hold you, we're going to give you immunity so you're not held liable for running them over. These bills are monstrous. Here's Florida. In Florida, State Senator George Gaynor sponsored SB 1096, a bill that limits liability for motorists responsible for the unintentional injury or death of protesters obstructing traffic. The Florida State Fraternal Order of Police, an association that represents 22,000 law enforcement personnel in the state, held a press conference to support the Gaynor bill. And in all of these instances, the people who propose these bills have not backed away from them. And look, those are cops, and 22,000 of them, it's not a few bad apples, saying, you see protesters on the road, why not just run them over? So hey, we want to call the people in Charlottesville fascists who killed Heather Heyer? Well, that's literal, and there's no question about that. But what do you call the people who want to make that legal? There's an argument to be made that you call them something worse. Now, these bills did not pass. And by the way, if you're wondering, hey, Cenk, you said they're winks. Are you sure about that? Now, let's go to a different instance here to give you a sense of the mindset. In Massachusetts, a police officer cheered on Heyer's death over the weekend, posting on Facebook, ha, 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 love this. Maybe people shouldn't block roadways. And North Dakota also considered this. In fact, similar bills have been proposed in Rhode Island, North Carolina, Tennessee, and North Dakota. In North Dakota, it's because there was protesters who were saying, hey, don't do drilling here. It's likely to pollute the river that it's going under. In fact, there's leaks all the time. There's been leaks since then. And if it gets into the waterways, it could poison us all. The North Dakota Republicans were like, oh, great. If they're trying to protect the waterways, make sure you run them over. Oh, I'm sorry. I'll give you immunity if you happen to run them over on the road. If we see it with our own eyes, it's so uncomfortable, we're going to have to call it fascist. But if we pass it as a law, then hey, it's legal to be a fascist. These are grotesque. Luckily, none of these have passed so far. But the Republicans, and they are all Republicans, who propose these bills are unrepentant and want to keep on going and actually get them into law at some point. Disgusting. Okay, now let's go to John Kelly for a second here before we do the final fun story. Okay, General John Kelly is the new chief of staff for Donald Trump, and we're told over and over that he's going to impose discipline, and he's trying. So that's this story. I'll tell you what I think is going to be the conclusion at the end. But Politico reports in a conference call last week, Kelly initiated a new policymaking process in which just he and one other aide, White House Staff Secretary Rob Porter, a little known but highly regarded Rhodes Scholar who overlapped with Jared Kushner as an undergraduate at Harvard, will review all documents that cross the Resolute desk. All of a sudden, everybody's calling it the Resolute desk. I know that it's been the name for a while, but now everybody's using it now that Trump's in office. It drives me crazy. It's the most irresolute person sitting at a desk called the Resolute desk. Anyway, Rob Porter is a little known guy. He's the staff secretary. I'm going to get back to him in a second because apparently he's making monumentally important decisions. The new system, though, is designed to ensure that the president won't see any external policy documents, internal policy memos, agency reports, and even news articles that haven't been vetted. Now, this is actually a fairly normal process in a White House, both under Democrats and Republicans. Hey, we don't want any lone rangers walking into the Oval Office, especially if the president's stupid like George W. Bush was. The insiders there said Bush would listen to whoever was last in his office. So Dick Cheney, in a separate story, they also reported that Dick Cheney would always stay around after the meetings were over to talk to Bush last. Gee, I wonder why he did that. So what you want to do is present all sides to the president, give him all the options, and have him decide without undue influence by some random straggler that walks in the Oval Office. That's exactly what the job of chief of staff is. So by the way, John Kelly, nice job in trying to get it under control. So They explained that the keystone of a new system is a decision memo that will, for each Trump policy, integrate the input of cabinet agencies and policy councils and present the president with various options as well as with the advantages and drawbacks of each one. Look, when I say nice job to John Kelly, I don't mean in terms of policy. The policy options they're going to present him are going to be, from our perspective, universally loathsome. So that's not what I'm talking about here. But it at least gives you some order and some way of making decisions in a rational way. Here's the drawbacks, here's the upsides, here's your set of options. This is elementary stuff. It's ridiculous that it was not instituted until now, 8 months in. I thought that Trump was gonna manage things so well, it was gonna make our head spin. It seems like he made his own head spin. So why did they need this? Well, Politico also reports one official called Bannon a disruptive force who did not want to follow any set path for making White House decisions. So when Bannon was still at the White House, he just walked into Trump's office and be like, okay, here's an article I found. It happens to be from Breitbart. Oh, it says you should fire all my enemies and put me on the National Security Council. And Trump's like, oh, is that what it says? Oh, and it says that you're really smart. Oh, I love this article. It says I'm smart. Okay, I'll do whatever you say. So now Bannon's gone and they're like, no, we're not gonna do things in that way anymore. And look at that too, Bannon knew what an idiot Trump was and how easily controllable he was. That's why he would do the things that he did. It's so obvious. Now, a senior White House administration official says, in the past, a few senior administration officials unilaterally made policy calls that everyone had to live with. It seems like those days are over. Well, not quite, as you're about to see. But they give an example here. In policy meetings for trade, for example, Porter, this is going back to Porter now and how decisions are being made now. Porter has been left to mediate disputes between the National Economic Council director Gary Cohn, who favors free trade, and protectionist Peter Navarro, the head of the White House's National Trade Council. Wait, this Porter dude, who is a White House staff secretary, is making the decisions a president should, because the president is out golfing. So the man child can't concentrate. Are you kidding me? Who's right? Gary Cohn, who is more of an establishment figure, a former head of Goldman Sachs, CEO of Goldman Sachs, or a more protectionist like Peter Navarro, which is what Trump promised on the campaign? That's a decision Trump should make. That's a very, very important decision. He's like, I gotta go to Mar-a-Lago. I gotta go to Mar-a-Lago. So here, have the secretary do it. In this case, not secretary, it's in, you know, taking dictation, etc. But it is not that he is going way above his pay grade to make monumentally important decisions because there's no one at home. Now, as to whether this will stick, the president made policy pronouncements without consulting all the stakeholders in his own administration, political reports. Absent a formal policy process, their input often didn't make it into the president's desk. That was the old days, theoretically. Well, they continue to say, whether a president known for freelancing can live with military discipline is another matter. And then Tevi Troy, former domestic policy deputy assistant, says, the process works if people stick to it. So here's my prediction. Of course, Trump isn't gonna stick to it. Now, Kelly will have order and they will set those memos in front of him. Now remember, Donald Trump can't read past a tweet. I'm not joking. This is from his own advisors, who said they first gave him 4-page briefings like they used to give on national security issues to Obama. He couldn't handle 4 pages. Then they brought it down to a page. Then they started putting pictures and graphs on the one page to make him pay attention. Then they started putting in positive things about him so that he would read his own name. Then they brought it down to 1/2 page. And then finally, preparing him for NATO meetings in Europe, they brought it down to tweet size information. The man child will not pay attention. So, I mean, sure, give credit to John Kelly for putting together memos that has both sides and a set of options for him. Even if I don't like those policy options, that's at least how the process should work. You think he's gonna read those? He's not gonna read those. He's gonna watch Fox and Friends and go, hey, what did Bert and Ernie say? Oh, they're so right, they're so right. I'm going on Twitter. For example, his military advisors told him, you can't do the transgender military ban. There's a process for that. So that's, you can in the long run, but you've got to go through, you got to do a study, you got to go to the Pentagon, you got to do all this stuff, right? And he's like, oh yeah, you can't tell me what to do. Bert and Ernie told me that I could do it. And he tweeted out, you know, today in the news, they're like, oh yeah, well, since he tweeted out, it's not really it's not in effect at all. A tweet is not a real thing. The president can't order things through tweet. So James Mattis, defense secretary, is like, we will now begin the process of trying to figure out if we're going to take out transgender people from the military. And by the way, he has the authority to not remove them from the military. Because you can't control the man child. And what did you do today? His advisors, oh, we got a memo, we put it together, and then we put out a statement in the morning saying, oh, that article in the New York Times about how Mitch McConnell and Donald Trump are fighting, fake news, ridiculous. No, they're on great terms. Donald Trump looks at Bert and Ernie on Fox and Friends, how deucey, so right. Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan are bastards, I can't believe they're not listening to me on the debt ceiling. So we ask you guys, I'm clear on this, but this is a poll that we've been doing. Will Trump eventually fire John Kelly? TYTnetwork.com/Kelly. Political and all the others are very impressed and they're saying, no, Kelly's in great shape and everything's gonna be fine and he's put things in order. He's done a fine enough job trying, he will not be able to control Trump. And at some point when he says, no, Mr. President, you can't fire everyone that has ever investigated the Russia, you can't fire the special counsel and the head of the Justice Department and the head of the FBI, you can't fire them all. He said, why? I want to fire them. Bert and Ernie told me I could. You're fired. So we'll see. That's why I like to make the predictions ahead of time. But my guess is, yeah, he'll fire Kelly. None of this will work because the fish rots from the head down, as Scaramucci, the Mooch, famously put it. Okay, now let's go to a super fun story to end this hour. We call it an hour, it is what it is. Anyway, okay. So if you noticed the other day in Phoenix when Trump was holding a rally, there was a gentleman behind him with an interesting sign. It said Blacks for Trump, and he is African American. And he's got more things on his shirt, which I'm gonna explain to you in a second. And so everybody was wondering, who is that black guy who's for Trump? Now, a lot of folks in the African American community voted against Donald Trump, resoundingly so, overwhelming majority. And some folks think you might be crazy if you're gonna vote for Trump or support Trump if you're black in America. Well, let's find out if he is. So who is this guy? This is a fun story. His name is Maurice Simonette, or is it? It's also Maurice Woodside, it's also Michael the Black Man. Okay, now when you need an alias, that's your first red flag. There's some chance that this is not going to go well. Okay, so as you guys saw there, he held the Blacks for Trump sign. In fact, we have it on video how enthusiastic he is for Donald Trump. After we come back from the video, I'm gonna tell you who Maurice Simonette slash Woodside slash the Black Man is, what his websites say, and what he's done in the past. Buckle up. First, let's see his enthusiastic support for the president.
Which is absolutely necessary. I'll make a prediction. I think he's gonna be just fine, okay? Don't mention any names. So I won't. I won't. This is me speaking. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. That's me speaking on Saturday, right after the event. Why did it take a day? He must be a racist. It took a day. Very presidential, isn't it? Very presidential. But I won't do it tonight because I don't want to cause any controversy. Is that okay? All right.
Oh, stop it. Stop it. Okay. So as you can partly see there, his shirt said Trumps and Republicans are not racist. Okay, all right, it's very clear. And then he had a couple of websites you might not have seen. It says blacksfortrump2020.com, okay? And then he had another one that said gods2.com. Uh-oh, I wonder what that is. Well, actually, when you go to it, they all lead to honestfact.com, which I've got news for you, is not honest or facts. So we're gonna get to what it says there. But first, I want you to understand, this guy is not some random schmo who happened to show up, you know, behind the president. No, he goes and takes pictures with Republicans all the time. They're happy to take it. They're like, look, it's a black guy. Right, sure. The media says blacks are not for us. We've got Michael, the black guy, or whatever his name is, Maurice, with us. See, here he is with Marco Rubio, and then Ted Cruz, and then here we go one more time, and Coulter. And then Michelle, is that Michelle? No, who is that? Is that Kellyanne Conway? No, I can't quite tell who that is. Okay, anyway, that person, okay. Yes. So, okay. So he's with all these notable Republicans. Did any of them go to his website? They're so proud that they have one black supporter. Did anybody check out, should I take a picture with this guy? Is this guy okay? Well, if you go to his website, you find out. One claims to link one of his theories on the site, Hillary Clinton with the Islamic State and the criminal gang MS-13. What? But you know, look, Republicans these days are so crazy, they might actually believe that. I don't know. But this guy's a lunatic. I mean, of course, Islamic State, MS-13. What does she have anything to do with MS-13? All right, but we're not done yet. Here comes the fun ones. Nice 14 slip there. Cherokees are the real, he claims, are the real KKK racist slave masters, not white Gentiles, who are black people's Republican emancipators. So, okay, I'm not surprised by the Republican talking point of, oh, Republicans saved it. They're my emancipator. Oh, Republicans. Oh, I love you. I love you. But the Cherokees, what? One of his theories is that the Native Americans are the ones who actually slaved African Americans. All right, it gets weirder. Simonet has uploaded a number of long-winded videos on YouTube, often as Michael the Black Man. There he discusses his theories on race wars involving Democrats, Gentiles, Canaanites, and the Cherokee. Oh, thank God, the Canaanites. I thought he was gonna leave them out. Hello, obviously Hillary working with the Canaanites, driving Cherokees. Do I have to say anything more? Oh, the Republicans are so proud they found one black guy. They're like, oh yeah, of course. Who cares what he says? Oh yes, yes, one black guy's on our side, yes. So do you have to be crazy to be black and support Donald Trump? Yeah, I mean, this guy is. We're not even anywhere near the craziest parts yet, which is his past. All right, one more conspiracy theory. In 2008, Simonet reportedly claimed that then Senator Obama had tried to have him assassinated. Yes, because President Obama was like, whoa, that one dude who believes in insane stuff about the Cherokee and the Canaanites, I really need to get rid of him. Which is weird, because President Obama did not have him assassinated, nor did he set up FEMA camps or work with MS-13 or put us in hobbit homes. It's almost as if they're crazy. Okay, well, Maurice wants to defend himself, so he says, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't support any kind of activity that goes against what God asks us to do. Well, that sounds pretty wholesome. He says, you can check my record. I've never been convicted of anything. Wait, what do you mean you haven't been convicted of anything? That's the kind of thing somebody says if they were charged with things and happened to not get convicted. Nobody's ever asked me a question. I was like, I've never been convicted of anything. So let's find out what his situation is. His rap sheet lists arrests for racketeering, firebombing, conspiracy and 14 murders, and Grand Theft Auto, the New Times reported in 2011. Hey, Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, Donald Trump, your one black friend. Firebombing, Grand Theft Auto, 14 murders, not convicted. In the early 1990s, Simonet, who then went by the name of Maurice Woodside, was arrested along with other members of an African American cult called the Temple of Love. The New Times reported its leader, Yahweh Ben Yahweh, sounds like a fun guy, formerly known as Hulan Mitchell Jr., was later sentenced to 20 years in federal prison for conspiring to commit murder. Simonet was acquitted. So to be fair, I've now said three different times that he was not convicted. He apparently was part of the cult, but they, you know, thought that the cult leader mainly did it, and he didn't have enough culpability beyond a reasonable doubt. Okay, good for him. But so, Simonet, how did he convince you, this Yahweh Ben Yahweh, to join a cult and which wind up actually committing these murders? Whether he did, Simonet did it or not, the cult did do it and the guy got convicted for it. So, I mean, did he have a compelling case? He said, he got me by just walking up and saying, all white people are the devil. This sophisticated thinker is the guy who now, by the way, it's not just Trump and Rubio and the other guys. All over the internet, right wingers going, you see, they said we didn't have blacks on our side. The guy who thinks we're the white devil, or used to think that, and now has now joined a different cult called the Trump cult, now is on our side. I rest our case. Black people love Trump. Well, this particular insane dude does. Just buyer beware. That's all I'm saying. Young Turks.